When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast goes out to Richard Powell,
Anwar Harris,
Rachel,
and Tyler Smith. Thanks to these fantastic patrons, the Major Spoilers Podcast is coming to you for free. You can join these super fans and a growing community of patrons at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, has Marvel turned murderous? Steven talks the latest in nuclear robotics. Ashley takes us to the movies, and I review a really, really big issue. Then it's Six Gone Talk from your favorite panel. Matthew's out today, so the Power Rangers references fall to me. That pink girl is a cat, I guess. The Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 760 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Oh, I love starting the new year off with an even number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way you got to do it.
Of course, not an even number of panelists. So,
well, yeah, I suppose.
That's so close.
I know. Matthew is out today, stuck at an airport somewhere, but that is okay by us. Well, no, it's not okay by us.
We will that's still. So rude.
No. That is okay. We will still make it through.
That's
not what I meant. We'll still make it through. Matthew is okay. Everyone's okay. Everyone is here. Ashley, Rodrigo, our listeners, and Matthew in spirit. Why don't we just jump into some news? Oh, we don't have a do-do-do-do-do-do guy. Man, this show sucks. Really, we've only got one thing to talk about. Marvel kills a bunch of titles. Now, this has been a couple of weeks now, going back to about mid-December, where Marvel just like canceled like six books: Captain Marvel, Generation X, America, the Unbelievable Gwenpool, Luke Cage, The Defenders, and apparently She-Hulk is also canceled as well.
Spider-Gwen is also rumored to be on the chopping block.
Spider-Gwen, what's going on? These were like all new, all cool characters, Ashley.
They were all the characters I'm reading, so I guess I'm not going to read that much Marvel any. Well, I guess Runaways is still being published. I think this is something that's been in the works for a long time. Obviously, that's the way the publishing industry works. I think this is going to be a return from the legacy event that they built up for a long time that really, I don't know if it failed, but it was certainly not as successful as I know they were hoping for it to be. The sales on it were not as high as previous events had been. I think this is Marvel cleaning the slate and everything's going to go back to the nice white guy MCU version that it was about 5 years ago. I think Lady Thor is going away, or she's at least getting a new title.
Yeah.
The Spider-Gwen rumor is, yes, the Spider-Gwen rumor is that she's being rebranded as Ghost Spider in keeping with the new movie. But I just think this is Marvel cleaning house and being like, yeah, that was cute. I know you like two Hawkeyes, but the movie one is more important. And that's their prerogative. But I feel like Marvel is in a position where DC was a few years ago, where it's just a little growing pain and it needs a change. I don't know if this is the right change, but ultimately it does come down to the numbers. And if they're not selling, I mean, I guess them's the breaks, but these are all the books I like.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the Marvel Legacy promotion, which was supposed to be this bridge between your old characters and these new kids, as well as the legacy renumbering and all of that stuff going forward. And the problem
real,
is
real creative renumbering.
Yes. The problem is, personally, I think Marvel totally screwed up on that promotion because no one knew what the heck it was. They thought it was just renumbering. And when you actually read one of those old hero, new hero issues, they were actually pretty good and actually had a bigger story to tell. And it just totally fell on flat for everyone. So I think that's part of the problem. You may be right that if the issues were selling fairly low, I can see canceling titles. And we always talk about if issue is selling below 3,000 copies per issue from the big two, that's generally an indicator that it's going to be canceled if something doesn't turn around. But like Gwenpool, that's pretty popular. She-Hulk, pretty popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there something else?
They already canceled Silk, which is a pretty, I don't know how popular it is, but it's a very like beloved character. Like we've seen a couple, I guess, test runs. Like we've seen these characters go, you know, Hellcat was canceled. Unstoppable Wasp only got a single series. Power Man and Iron Fist was canceled to make way for this new Luke Cage book. And it is interesting because these are the books that in the past year we saw some not so kind retailers and other people blaming for the downfall of Marvel. And I also wonder if this is partially reactionary to those voices saying like, hey, we need to clean out our slate a bit. So let's take out these books that some people have been complaining about.
And for listeners that don't know,
I hope that's not the case.
Well, for listeners that don't know what Ashley's talking about, last year at the retailer summit, a big kerfuffle, and I think it was from a vocal minority that basically said diversity is killing Marvel. Stop it with all the diversity.
Yeah.
And then Marvel tried to turn around and blame the fans that, hey, the fans aren't reading comics, so it's their fault that we're in all this trouble. Meanwhile, then Marvel goes on and creates a whole Nazi Captain America when he's not really Nazi Captain America. And that blew up in their face.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm being kind of overly dramatic and on that example. But I mean, it kind of, all of these kind of fall down this. Someone this week tweeted like 10 major blunders that Marvel has made this year. And this one is one of them, because I'm looking at Gwenpool right now from November. It was 101st in the list of top 300 comics, sold an estimated 22,000 copies.
A respectable place to be for
that. I mean, that is in the up. I mean, it's just outside of the upper third, but I mean, it is in the upper third. And if you were to look at all the Marvel books, I bet it's in the top 50 to 75 of Marvel books. Rodrigo, what's going on here? What are some thoughts on why they're canceling this stuff?
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. And the, you know, I hate to bring it all back to like, well, if they would just release the numbers kind of stuff. But it's very difficult to tell because we have this like weird rubric through Diamond by which comics are judged. And it is in no way representative of how many eyeballs are going to these comics.
Right.
You know,
well, even if
so, I think it works both ways. I think it like justifies a company being like, well, we don't like this creative team, or we don't like this character, or we might actually get the Fantastic Four back, so we need some room to push those Fantastic Four comics. So kill this book and this book. And because you never have those actual numbers handy,
right?
You know, because we don't know them and we can't know them basically.
And we don't know the digital sales on top of that.
Yeah. That's right. That's really crazy because I mean, again, I'm hearing anywhere from 50%, 10 to 50% of what the retail sale is, the print sale is what we're hitting in the digital sale. So
I would believe that
if we're looking at this, I said Spider-Gwen was at 101. Runaways is at 131 with 16,000 copies. Ms. Marvel, number 24, sold an estimated 15,000. And again, when I say sold an estimated, I mean, that's how much were shipped to the comic book shop. Right. Power Pack was 15,000. Captain Marvel 126 was 15,000. Gwynpool 22 sold 14,000, just under 15,000. But I mean, these are all still in the upper half of that top 300 list. This is not a cancellation list as I look at the numbers. I mean, if I were to go and look at the numbers, let's go down to the bottom of the list, and we're looking at Game of Thrones Clash of Kings number 6 selling less than 5,000 copies from Dynamite Entertainment. Ash versus the Army of Darkness from Dynamite. Sorry, Dynamite, I'm picking on you. Less than 5,000 copies. Steven Universe from Boom Studios, 5,000 copies.
No. Are there Marvel books down there?
Let me look and see what the lowest. Let me see the lowest Marvel book that I. First one that I see, Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series. That's a mini series. So that doesn't surprise me that it only had 6,800 copies. Monsters Unleashed, 7,400 copies. Monsters Unleashed number 8, 7,400 copies. Let me see what else. Here's America number 9. So this is one of the ones that's canceled.
Sure,
it's at 225 and it's got 8,000 copies sold. Right below that, Kingsman Red Diamond number 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard to tell. Like, you know, maybe these are the ones that are at the very bottom, even though they're doing well. So Marvel is trying to clear up that room to do something else. But it really seems, it's just like really unfortunate, if that's the case, that it happens to be all of these female-led comics or all of these minority-led comics that are kind of like getting chopped right now.
And it does make it look suspect, even if it is something as simple and honest as that's the numbers and that's what's backing it.
I guess, but I mean, we've seen characters who have been really low sellers before suddenly turn around and become huge hits.
Oh, yeah.
Unless they've got something else up their sleeve, unless there's the next big event coming out, some big announcement that's coming out at what? New York Comic Con is the next one.
WonderCon.
Maybe Marvel will have some big announcement there where they will say, hey, this is what's going on. And all your characters are going to come be part of a new renumbering system or new volumes or something.
I hope so. I will say that WonderCon tends to not be a Marvel con. They don't show up for it very much because it is an LA convention. That's usually where DC makes. That's where the big Rebirth announcement was made.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be dope if that was the case. And I do sincerely hope that whatever comes out of all this, I hope Marvel does something great because I mentioned the growing pains earlier, like they could use a good start to 2018.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. This is all coming out of the solicitation information where they're saying, hey, this is the final issue, or this is the final story, or this is the final creative team. There's nothing that says when the April solicits come out or the May solicits come out.
Now,
a lot of these aren't relisted with all new volumes and an all new creative team. I mean, that could happen, too. As far as I know, none of these are ending in the middle of an arc.
I hope that's not true, but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I mean, Mockingbird had really low numbers and it survived.
Yeah, but Mockingbird also had other issues.
Well, yes. So maybe this isn't the end. Maybe this isn't a firm cancellation. Maybe it's just the ending of that volume. And because these titles are not part of the legacy renumbering, you really can't just say, hey, Gwynpool is now jumping up to issue 277. Maybe it's time to say that you keep some comics in small volume runs. Other comics, you try to slap a legacy number on it and hope that you bring back longtime fans who have wandered away because comics have become too political at Marvel or whatever excuse people are making. Maybe that's all it is. I don't know. But if it is that, if it's literally that where we're canceling it because we don't like women or people of color in our comics, that's a bad excuse. But if it's a legitimate numbers thing, I could see that too. But I know that Marvel still does have a lot of success with number ones and the promotion of that. So maybe we should just wait for an official word from Marvel on any of this. Maybe the editor in chief will step up and say something.
Yeah, this also might just be, where Axel Alonso is no longer in the picture. So we're ending a number of things that were started at the end of his tenure.
Right.
It's, there's these swirling rumors about the current state of whether or not the EIC at Marvel is going to remain the EIC at Marvel in the wake of a little controversy. So it'll be interesting to see what comes after this. Because I think it will point to maybe how the next 4 or 5 years are going to go for Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's one thing that's going to have to happen. And we've talked about this on Finally Friday. Ashley and I talked about it briefly.
Yeah.
I really think we have to get away from this 3-month solicitation thing. I know it's so people can get their orders in so that comics can be printed and shipped and into the stores on the right time. Middleman, overseas, blah, 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 printing. But I really think we need to, number one, do away with this 3-month pre-order thing where you're expecting people to buy comics sight unseen and expect retailers to buy these sight unseen. And I also think that we need to get away from single issues. I've said that multiple times over last year, over the last couple of years. And I think Fantastic Four is a great place to come back and say, hey, we are releasing volume one. It's 120 pages or however long a 6-issue, 180 pages. Mm-hmm. And you can go buy it. And here's the story of Fantastic Four. And oh, by the way, following that a month later, here is your Gwenpool 180 page story. Oh, and after that, here's your other character, 180 pages. And I could see people getting more excited and going with a 3 or 2 month pre-order on that kind of stuff than a single issue.
Because that's the kind of model that a lot of small press is already working off of. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially what Kickstarter is already working off of. You buy something, yep, it comes out 6 months, a year, 2 years after mm-hmm. production.
But you know what you're getting.
Exactly. Well, because you have to, or else people won't spend no money on it. But yeah. Because it's difficult, because often too, speaking as someone who's worked as both an editor and a writer, you're often writing and asking for solicitation well in advance of the final draft.
Mm-hmm.
So people might not even know exactly what's in the book. And solicitations, I mean, there's some freaking bad solicitations out there.
Oh yeah, lies or changed or whatever.
Or just like there's no effort put into it. Like it's just complete BS. And you make a good point. Asking people to buy a comic sight unseen it's tough.
Yeah, but I mean, again, not to kind of go totally off topic here, because I've said this before. When you look at what DC did with its Earth One series, with Superman, Earth uh-huh. One, Batman, Wonder Woman, I think the Green Lantern one is still on the works. All of those sold super, super well. They had publicity. They had not entire chapters, but they had a big preview section that you could read a month before and say, hey, this is coming out. Don't forget to go and buy it. And those sold like gangbusters. They really sold well. They were on New York Times bestseller lists. And that is essentially a trade paperback approach.
But I think you make a good point about the marketing. I mean, most mm-hmm. books and most, I mean, I'll just say it, like non-Bat books won't get the same marketing, at DC, and a lot of non-Avengers books won't get them at Marvel. So, I mean, how many press releases have you ever seen for Gwenpool in your life? You know, how many Facebook ads have you ever seen for Gwenpool? In the way that every Avengers book you'll see a huge page bought out in previews. And part of that is a flaw in the business model as well.
Mm-hmm. Rodrigo, it seems like at this point we are at a point where it's the fans screaming, Marvel, this is all your fault. And Marvel is screaming back, no fans, this is all your fault. Where are we in this argument?
Oh, man. Well, I always fall on Marvel, it's all your fault. But I don't know. I think it's really not. Like, I don't know, it's like the content is not the problem, you know, like that's, you want to have this like broad amount of content so that, you know, you can get everybody to pick up a Marvel book and to talk about it. Here's what I see. I walk into comic book stores and hobby stores mm-hmm. and they are selling like Gwenpool, like t-shirts and mm-hmm.
Statues, action figures, all the merchandise. Yeah.
All that stuff. Same thing with Spider-Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's like posters of America and things like that. And I'm just like, you know, it's like this is what I'm seeing. And, you know, it's all anecdotal, but it's like people are into this stuff. People are talking about it. Like the comic book kids are talking about this. Yep. The mainstream's talking about Avengers because Avengers is what's in the movies. But, you know, it's like when they launched Marvel versus Capcom, and even now they released more characters for Marvel versus Capcom. And it's Venom, which is fine, you know, Spider-Man guy, but also Black Widow and Winter Soldier. So it's like there are so many characters in Marvel versus Capcom that are just like gun guys.
Right.
On the Marvel side, which is like, why? But also, these are all coming from that MCU stuff. That is what Marvel is leaning on. That is what they're trying to get out there because they know it'll sell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might just be this like line of fear where it's like the guy who is selling, you know, the guy at the very bottom of the totem pole at Marvel is like, well, I don't want to lose my job, so I'm going to push for these things that I know will sell. And the guy above him is like, well, I don't want to lose my job, so I'm going to push for like this small group of things that I know are going to sell. That
sure.
Because the brick and mortar stores are in the same place. You know, it's like, if you have to order comics sight unseen, are you going to order this new character, Gwenverine, or are you going to, and it's coming, or are you going to order, you know, Avengers, which again, now has the backing of being in the movies. And you're like, I know that people will come in. They love Thor Ragnarok. They're going to want this like Thor, Hulk, Iron Man comic. So I'm going to order that. Are they actually going to want something else from Marvel or something else from the indies even? You know, it's like, are they actually going to want that? Nah, I'll order one or two just to have on the shelf, just to say that I did. And then everything else is going to be,
Iron Man. Iron Man, Marvel, DC, Batman, whatever. A couple of things. When it comes to all the merchandise, Marvel's not out on that, deal. That's somebody else. That's Diamond Select Toys. That is your Big T-shirt companies. Those are your Hasbros and your Mattels.
Right.
That Sideshow. Are, right. Yeah, Sideshow so, collectibles let me, that
Sideshow,
are going out.
Sideshow just released that huge Spider-Man line, the Spider-Verse line.
Yeah.
And Spider-Gwen and Silk are two of the four statues in it.
And I guarantee those will sell.
And here's the
thing.
Oh,
they look amazing.
It's like, why are these companies putting out these things? Because they have actually functional marketing arms that are not throttled by Diamond.
Yeah. So here's the other problem. You were asking, how come we don't see things Facebook ads? Maybe I'm not their target market, but let me give you a little bit of insight.
That's fair. That's fair.
Here's a little bit of insight. There was a small indie publisher who was advertising on the major spoiler site for a year, right? That was about and I'm not going to give exact numbers, but I will tell you around how much advertising dollars we brought in from that campaign, $10,000, right? And it was on the site every day. They had free samples for people to go check out because they wanted people to go and buy their comics. They were super indie. They also did that on probably 20 or 30 other comic book websites. And I saw it on Facebook and I saw it in other places. And I know what I was charging. And that's not what I know a lot of other websites were charging, like a Bleeding Cool or a CBR or something like that.
Yeah.
And so you can see that that company in that year probably spent $1 million plus just in marketing to comic book readers on comic book sites. I'm not saying the comics were bad. They weren't great, but they were good. I found a couple of their series quite entertaining. But I don't think you're going to go up to a Marvel and say, Marvel, you need to do some Facebook targeted ads for people who like Gwenpool, and you're going to spend $10,000 a month for the next year just to promote Gwenpool, another $10,000 a month just to promote Avengers, another $10,000 just to do this, that, and the other thing. Because I'm going to bet that they don't have a $5 to $10 to $20 million plus advertising budget to do that kind of targeting marketing that would attract people who don't even know that Gwenpool exists. But if they're on their Facebook or if they're on their Instagram or something and it pops up as a sponsored ad or as a targeted ad, then they might be able to do it. But I guarantee you there's no comic book publisher that has those deep pockets just by themselves to go out and spend the money. Because here's what happened at the end of the year with this one indie publisher that was advertising with us. I had to chase them down literally to get them to pay the last 2 months of their bill.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just gave up on the last month of the bill because they just disappeared and folded and went out of business.
Oof.
So, yes, I didn't get paid for advertising that went up on the site. But I think Marvel would be in the same situation if they had to take and create targeted ads for every single one of their titles, which they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
They would be their marketing budget would be blown within the first month. But I think that's what they need to do. I think they need to do something like that. Disney has big pockets, but Disney isn't going to say, sure, Marvel, here's an unlimited Facebook ad campaign for you guys to go out and promote your stuff, because that's not going to happen. And Warner Brothers isn't going to do it for DC.
Oh, I don't think the movie studios over either comic book company particularly care what the books are doing, as long as the IP is still good.
Yeah.
I mean, just honestly, they're working on a different scale.
And if you're worried about Miles Morales or Spy D, whatever they're going to call him next.
I can't believe they're changing him its name. I think it's so dumb.
I know, that's so dumb. But I mean, you do have that Into the Spider-Verse movie that's coming out. You do have a lot of stuff that will be featuring Gwenpool and She-Hulk and all of these other characters. This is not the end of those characters.
Yes, definitely not.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that we want to add on top of this? No. Hearing no, let us move on and talk about some reviews. Oh, no,
reviews.
See, this is the problem with no Matthew. No reviews. This week, I took a look at Atomic Robo and the Spectre of Tomorrow, number 3 from Brian Clevenger and Scott Wegner from IDW Publishing. I'm a big fan of Atomic Robo, have been in for the last 10 years, ever since this comic has been around. This is a series that you can read for free on the internet, on their website, if you like. Or if you want to kick them a few bucks, you can go and buy the print version of the comic, which, I'll be honest, buying that physical copy is, I don't want to say better, but I think it's more fulfilling, because if you don't remember to go to their website every single day to read the next page, then you might forget that it's there. Whereas if you've got it in hand, you can read right where the beginning and end of each chapter is. In Atomic Robo and the Spectre of Tomorrow, there is some strange virus that is literally turning people into cyborgs and having them turn inside out, just at random around the world. And everyone is freaked out about it. Atomic Robo has decided that he's going to create the new Tesladyne Institute out in the desert right next door to, what's the Virgin Airways, the Virgin America guy?
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. So he's located right next to Richard Branson, and next door, his other next door neighbor is Elon Musk. And because of all of his heavy construction, there's some not so good will between those three parties involved. But Robo has figured out that, and again, this is one of the good things and maybe one of the bad things about Atomic Robo. When they had to rebuild him from scratch, because at the end of the Knights of the Golden Circle arc, he was stranded in the Wild West with only his head surviving, and they had to go through and rebuild his body. Well, they found this island that had been inhabited by an AI that they thought that they had destroyed, but apparently he's back, and this AI is got some nefarious plan up his sleeve. So at the end of this issue, in the middle of this issue, they go flying off to that island where they are met with giant robots that want to beat up Atomic Robo. And at the end, an old enemy resurfaces yet once again. And that's where the issue ends. Atomic Robo and the Spectre of Tomorrow is really good. Scott Wegner has changed his art style slightly over the years. Brian Clevenger is still putting a lot of research into his book. So it's really solid storytelling. And if you are done with issue number 3 and want to find out what happens next, you go over to their website and you can continue to read it. The biggest problem that I have, which is also a nice thing, is 10 years in, this book, this series is really starting to mire down in continuity, meaning you need to know what has happened in the previous chapters in order to enjoy what's going on in the current story. Again, the plus side, you can go to their website. You can read all of the comics for free, literally for free. I still say you want to buy them in the collection. The good thing about it is, hey, this is a series that has been going for 10 years and is still easily approachable by anyone. I think anyone will enjoy this. If you like smart talking robots, If you like some of his bumbling yet smart assistance, if you like Robo thumbing noses at famous people through history, then Atomic Robo and the Spectre of Tomorrow is really a book that you should pick up. I enjoy this series. As I've said, it's no surprise then that I'm giving this 5 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. Atomic Robo, the Spectre of Tomorrow, number 3. It's out right now. Go pick it up. Rodrigo, what do you have for us this week?
This week, I have Giants, number 2. Written by Carlos Valderrama, art by Miguel Valderrama. It's put out by Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm. By Wilmer Valderrama?
No. You wish.
I don't. I super don't.
No, probably not. So, it is my catchphrase, save the drama for Wilmer Valderrama.
Nice.
That's from Happy Endings. It's a good show. You should watch it. But let's talk about comics instead. So I was not aware of this series, probably because I've been in kind of a video game mode. So comics have kind of taken a backseat a little bit. But I came across this today, and I was really wowed by it. This is the story of some people that live underground, and they've made their way to the surface. And the surface is populated by giant monsters.
And, oh, no.
Yes, it's very dangerous for them. So you have these two kids. They make it to the surface. One of them makes it back down, and the other one meets surface dwellers, like humans that live on the surface. The art is really fantastic. I really like it. The characters are really well done, very distinguishable from each other. Like there's a lot of like just very good, like solid, simple design to them. Both the human characters and the monsters, because it's easy to have a series where it's like all the humans have the same heads, just different colors, but mm-hmm. oh man, look at these monsters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not so. These are really well put together. You know, basically all that happens in this issue is, oh no, a monster. But there's still a lot going on, a lot of like clear interpersonal relationships and things like that. So I this is a very pleasant find for me. I'm going to give it 4.5 slices of meatloaf. And I'm really looking forward to the next issue.
Solid. Good. That's from Dark Horse Comics. It's out this week or is it out next week?
It's out next week, I think.
Okay, cool. All right, Ashley, there's a movie that's out in theaters right now. It's a movie I'm very interested in. It's got Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep and Steven Spielberg in it. It's based on history, so it's got to be good, right?
It's super not very good.
Oh, that's so sad.
I would definitely say if you are interested in seeing The Post, wait 3 months for it to be on Amazon or Netflix because it's not worth the $17 I paid to see it at the cinema. This is the second Spielberg movie in a row that would have been a lot better if it were less ham-fisted and less, boy, didn't we all work together to achieve this? Mm. I'm looking at you, Bridge of Spies. Which is a problem that I've had with maybe every Spielberg movie I've ever seen that wasn't Schindler's List, and is maybe a mark of the fact that he's an older gentleman now and wants everyone to live a happy life. And I can empathize with that, but I feel like it cuts the drama out from stories like The Post. Mm-hmm. The Post talks about how the Washington Post went from being a tiny little local newspaper to the giant evil corporation that it is now through an initial public offering and really aggressive storytelling that in conjunction with the New York Times uncovered what was happening in Vietnam and how the U.S. government knew that things were going bad, but sure did keep to it anyway. Kind of all the scandal that led up to Watergate. So in the wake of Watergate, everyone forgot about it, but was some really important breaking journalism at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem with it is it stars Meryl Streep as Katharine Graham, who was the first woman to be in charge of the Washington Post, who's an incredibly important historical figure who shaped this newspaper in an important way, who's a very powerful woman, the movie would be a lot better without her storyline in it. She comes across as a privileged housewife who fell into this position and doesn't know what to do. And I don't know about you, but I'm sick of movies about billionaires because I don't care. I don't care that you're really good at throwing parties and running a newspaper is hard, which is really kind of the thrust of her character. The more interesting story is Tom Hanks as Ben Bradley with pretty much all the cool white guy character actors that you like from HBO and Showtime and AMC. Like all of Mr. Show is in it. Carrie Coon from The Leftovers is in it. Josh Lyman is in it, and I can't remember the actor's name. Bradley Whitford is in it. He's wonderful. Matthew Reese from The Americans is it. Like, all the cool white guy character actors are in this movie, and they're a delight. And they make the drama, they make this movie feel like it matters. They make all of this feel like it's an interesting movie because this is an interesting thing that happened, except they're all super minor. Matthew Reese, who I think is one of the great actors working right now, who's terribly undersung, has like 2.5 whole scenes, which is a travesty, so that we can have 2 scenes of Meryl Streep walking through crowds of women who literally reach out for her as if she were wearing the Shroud of Turin as she steps into a room full of a bunch of guys to make things better. And while Katharine Graham is an important figure, she wasn't exactly like the front of the women's lib movement. So it's really ham-fisted, which is bad because there's a good movie hiding in there under a bunch of drivel and sentimentality. She'll probably get an Oscar nomination for it. I would say it is undeserved, but that's me being bitter. It's an interesting story. Rent the movie when it comes out. It's not worth going to the cinema for, and it's certainly not worth having to sit through the Mamma Mia sequel trailer that they start out the trailer reel with.
Oh no.
How does this I was really interested in this movie because, again, it's talking about an important part of history and how newspapers were able to step up and really show the power of the press and what they could do, providing that they were following all the rules that they were doing. It also you know, challenging this
it's
this
also
right.
Yeah,
because it was challenging this right for papers to print stuff without having to notify the government, you know, saying, hey, we're running this article that's really damning against you. Do you want to come in and stop us doing it? I mean, this was kind of a big deal.
I'll also say that in the wake of the current state of the world, this feels topical, but again, it feels super, super ham-fisted in the way it does address, because the First Amendment's incredibly important, and the First Amendment is what allowed these people to do this and not go to jail.
Right.
But it's just not very
good. I was interested in it from that historical perspective, but also because I really kind of like really solid newsroom and drama stuff, and I was hoping it was going to be as good as Spotlight. Now, how would you compare this to Spotlight?
So I wrote like a joke tweet about this that I feel like nobody got, because when everyone was mad about The Last Jedi, they were like, I liked it, but I didn't like how they made Luke Skywalker into a massive dick. And then other people were like, you just don't understand what the Force is, man. Have you even seen, like, I don't know, Empire Strikes Back? So I wrote like, oh, the Post is so great. Anyone who doesn't like it doesn't understand newspaper movies. Have you even seen Spotlight? And everyone commented and they were like, what are you talking about? I was like, oh, shit. Spotlight is so much better on every level. Spotlight, even the first season of The Newsroom, which really goes in the tank after that, really exemplify how news media, or even Sports Night, for God's sake, how news media and shows centered fiction centered around those events or those circumstances can be gripping. This is definitely not that.
Okay. Well, I guess based on your recommendation here, Ashley, I will watch Spotlight again and skip The Post.
Yes.
I haven't seen a lot of Steven Spielberg movies in a long time. We talked about this recently on a pre-show or top five or something.
I mean, sorry, but he's old. I feel like he lost what little edge he maybe ever had.
Yeah, when he had, talked about this before, but when he had kids, he totally changed. And then that happens with people. But with him, it suddenly became, let's tell some stuff that's a little bit more kid-friendly stuff and not scare them and terrify them and tell everyone there's aliens. So, that's just me, but...
Yeah, yeah, this could have used a little bit more bite.
Ever since Pan, I just have not been a fan of Steven Spielberg. So,
Pan. Yeah. Yeah. I have so many feelings about that movie.
Yes. Listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com. There are all sorts of cool things. And if you were not doing anything on your New Year's Day, Matthew and I were certainly busy, and there's a lot of cool stuff you can check over at majorspoilers.com, including reviews and stories. I just released my feature of the top, or not the top, but all of the books that I read in 2017, and it was quite a long list to put together. I think I topped out at almost 40 books that I read in 2017, and people are already saying, oh, Steven, here's some stuff that you can read in 2018. By all means, send them to me, podcast@majorspoilers.com, if you've got suggestions for books, you know, prose books, not comic books, and we'll see if it'll make it on the 2018 list. It's all over at majorspoilers.com, including the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week. So here's another change, a programming change for 2018. Instead of the Poll of the Week coming out on a Tuesday, Poll of the Week will now come out on Sunday, the start of the week, like it should have all along. But we finally got our act together and said, you know what? Sundays is when we'll have the Poll of the Week out. And so this week we do continue. I think this is the final week of new covers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I'm double check my sheet here. No. There's one more week of new covers. Two more weeks. Sorry. Got to have eight in a series before we can move to the next round. This week, we're asking you which of the following covers is your favorite. Which one do you like most? Is it Flash 123? This is the Flash of Two Worlds, where you have Silver Age Barry Allen and Golden Age Jay Garrick rushing to the man with the girder about to fall on him, both screaming, "I shall save you." Or do you prefer the Brave and the Bold number 28? This is the first appearance of the Justice League of America as a team as they go and they fight Starro the Conqueror in a really crazy three chapter tale that basically has Batman and Superman out of the picture because Superman's out in space punching meteors and Batman's like, "I'm busy fighting crime in Gotham. Leave me alone. Why are you calling this channel? Wrong caller.
How'd
wrong
you get
caller.
This number?"
Yeah. So, Rodrigo, why don't we start with you? Which of those two covers do you like the most?
Oof. This was a tough one because I like everybody fighting a big monster covers as much as the next guy. You know, the Fantastic Four, number one, that sort of thing. But I got to give it to The Flash.
Mm.
It's just... has that real like symmetry in a comic cover is good, but it's like especially good when it's motivated. You know, you have the wall, a flash on either side, and you're like, "Oh, what is happening?" You know, basically like any Flash cover that is like, "I think I'm turning into a puppet." So yeah, it's classic Flash in the what the heck is happening here, but also. It shows you sort of both characters. They're unaware of each other. They're both rushing to save someone. It's very symmetrical. It's very clean. My vote goes to Flash 123.
Okay. Ashley, what about you?
Oh, definitely The Brave and the Bold. I love that Justice League cover because Starro is like real stupid. I also really like it because I went to a comic convention once and Cullen Bunn kept doing impersonations of Starro and it was super funny. So every time I see Starro, I just imagine like Cullen Bunn as Starro. I think it's a very iconic cover. So is the Flash one. But the Flash one doesn't have Wonder Woman, so it's definitely got to be Brave and the Bold. I want one of those Starro action figures to put on top of my Christmas tree.
I've got one of those from
Comic-Con.
Comic-Con collection. I got up early in the morning because was it Hasbro? Yeah, Hasbro had their collector core thing website.
Yeah.
And like the day after Comic-Con, they were like, "We're putting these on pre-order." And I had tried to get into some lotteries before, so I knew how quickly they went out. So I got up really early and I was able to snag two of them. I know one for sure, but I'm pretty sure I've got two of them. And it's got Kevin Conroy on the box. It's got one of those little buttons that you push and it's got Kevin Conroy describing the cover to Brave and the Bold number 28 on it. Nice. It's really cool. Yeah.
You got two and you gave one away.
That's right. I did. I did give one away. Ashley, you should have been around 10 years ago or 8 years ago whenever we did that. So
I just have to kill you in your sleep for it. That's all I need.
Yeah. I went with Flash 123. If you are a fan of our Flashback podcast and listen to that over at patreon.com/majorspoilers, you know that in that first season of The Flash, I kept pointing out to Matthew, look at all the 123s they keep dropping in all of the episodes. They're going to bring in Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash. And he's like, nah, never going to happen. And then it happened. But here's why I like Flash 123. For a 35-year-old comic book reader in the 1960s, or whenever this issue came out, seeing Jay Garrick on there probably gave them the same excitement and satisfaction as when we see today when a classic character returns. I suppose like when Barry Allen returned, when Geoff Johns brought Barry Allen back from the dead. This is one of those moments where people look at this cover, and if they've been around long enough, they're like, What is Jay Garrick doing here? He's not part of this anymore. How is this happening? Because when the Silver Age Flash started, it was like really no nod to the Golden Age.
Yeah.
And so bringing in the Flash of Two Worlds and launching the multiverse, this is an important comic. And so for me, I went with Flash 123. So there you go. I would ask Matthew how the poll is going this week, but he's not here, unfortunately. But right now, with 89 votes in the bag, Flash 123 leads almost 4-1, 73% for Flash and 27% for Brave and the Bold. So there you go. Listeners, head over to MajorSpoilers.com, cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week. Look for a new one coming up on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And this is where someone's supposed to be Matthew and go, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
That's right, folks. Matthew.
That's right, folks. You will have to buy the whole ticket, but you're only going to use the portion of the front of your seat or however that goes. Hey, let's talk about the end of the world.
Yeah.
Six Gun Volume 8, Hell and High Water. Oh, I had the time. I finished reading the last two volumes today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, really considered just jumping to the next volume.
You should have, because holy cow.
Yeah.
Ashley, why don't you give us a rundown of what happens in Hell and High Water? Because there's a lot of stuff that's being covered in this volume.
So in Hell and High Water, Chris Pine and the guy who played Angel in X3 are brothers, and they like rob a bank.
Yeah.
That's a movie joke, guys.
That's a really good movie joke. Good job.
Thanks. Thanks. That was the first thing when we got the email that said, like, oh, this is what we're reading this week. I was like, but that's a movie. Oh, no, wait. That existed well before the movie. Hell or High Water is essentially a really great giant penultimate issue to, even though it's a volume, to what is going to be the end of Sixth Gun. It is
and the end of the world.
And the end of the world as we know it. Because everyone by this point is pretty convinced that the world's going to need to end. It's just whether or not we are happy with who's going to be remaking it. Becky has had this amazing character arc across 8 volumes, and she's pretty resigned that, like, yeah, the world should probably go away. But maybe not the Grey Witch should be in charge. Maybe that'd be good. I always forget the main character's last name. Mr. Douchebag in his boiler hat. Yep. He's the only one who's like, maybe we shouldn't do this. So them and Nadawi, who is now screaming crow per the events of the last volume, called together these Thunderbirds, which are like the eagles from Lord of the Rings. Yeah. And they go fly to the village where Griselda and her creepy son, because she's got like more than one of them, are trying to open the seal. And yeah. And they do that by killing a bunch of villagers to lubricate the seal and letting one tiny girl child run off. And then it's basically a fight for who's going to get down to hell first. And then we get a nice little button at the end because Gord is like dead, but not dead. Yay, Gord.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was really upset last volume. You guys will remember, because it's like all the characters are being killed and I hate this.
Yeah.
But here they start to appear. I mean, what's her
Kirby
name?
Kirby reappears.
Yeah, Kirby. Johnny comes back. She's got the spirit totem around her neck, but Griselda destroys that, and so she's alive for the time being, she says in quotes. Rodrigo, you're right, Kirby comes back, but he's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
He's been turned into one of the snake people. And I kind of like how his story ends, though. I guess when you're turned into one of the snake people, Griselda is like always in your head telling you what to do, and you are commanded to do it. So the command is to kill Sinclair and Becky on sight, and he can't do it. There's something about him that even though he's been turned, he cannot kill his the girl that he loves. And of course, Becky kills him instead. And you're right.
Yes,
Gord does come back. But Gordy also has a very tragic turn in this story.
Yes. He's the new whatever the heck that guy's
name is. Devil at the crossroads.
Yeah. He's got a name, though, and I feel bad that I can't remember it. But it's. Yeah, it's sad because he'll never really rest.
Calfu.
Calfu, yeah. There you go. Even though Calfu's like still there, kind of skulking around, I just think it's a really nice scene because I thought his reunion with Becky was very sweet. And I was shocked at how great I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's also a crazy fight, like you said, with the Thunderbirds in this town.
Yeah.
Having just watched Godless and the giant fight that's going on in that final episode of Godless, I can kind of imagine what if they were all riding giant Thunderbirds and fighting snake men, how epic that would be. And that's what's going on in I think literally an entire issue of this volume is just the fight. And then I can't tell if it's one of the Thunderbirds breaks a dam or one of the Thunderbirds just unleashes a torrent. But the whole town then gets flooded.
Yeah, very biblically.
Yeah, it's mighty amazing. I mean, then you've got the whole thing where all of our major spirit characters, like Kaifu or Calfu, and the Wendigo and the guy that's in the swamp.
Oh,
and
the Wendigo is so dope in this. I really love seeing the Wendigo again.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like there is an ominous sense of dread in this volume. Because all of the characters that you've seen through the series make an appearance, right? And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, this must really be the end, because this is where you bring back everybody or you cut to everybody.
It super feels like a final issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Did it feel that way to you, Rodrigo?
Yeah, it really gets you to the end zone. You know, it's like it just. I think what it does is it actually ties up a lot of potential loose ends so that then the last volume can just be the end so that you don't need to spend a lot of time being like, oh, what happened to Gord? Well, what happened to Kirby? It just like kind of weaves all that together. And then the last volume is probably just death.
Yeah. And then you've got, what is it? Is it the Swords of Abraham? Or no, it's got to be the Knights of Solomon that end up burying themselves. And we get to see the Keeper of Secrets, this guy it's really kind of interestingly done. This guy that is like decked out from head to toe in this.
I thought he looked like the Witch King.
Yeah. Kind of like that. Lord yes, exactly. Exactly. He looks just like that, but you know, he's all locked up in there and he's only can watch. He can only see what's coming. And apparently he's been around for, you know, time and time again. And he's got these creepy alkalites around him where they've actually had their skin wrapped around their eyes and sewn shut. Well, it's really creepy. But you got this guy and they are literally burying themselves in the sand, burying their heads in the sand. And it just seems really weird because they're like, well, if we're going to survive this, I guess we better crawl under the ground and wait for what's coming next, which seems like a totally stupid idea until you know what happens next. But yeah, this is just a straight out pedal to the metal. Let's get to the end of the world so that we can focus on what's next. Did it feel, it kind of felt a little rushed to me. I don't know if it felt that way to you guys.
It does read rushed because I think there's like no words on the page. So it reads super, super fast, even though there are like 12 panels at one point on the page.
Yeah.
Like, it's very strange. It's the most different, I think, from the previous issues that are, I keep calling them issues, the previous volumes that we've read. And maybe it is because there was a bit of a rush or a push to what was going to be the end of this series.
Rodrigo, did you feel the same way or different?
I don't know that I felt that was rushed. I think it does feel fast, and I think that's purposeful. To me, it really seems like they're like, okay, well, everything's unraveling now. Mm-hmm. So things start, you know, all the balls they had in the air, they just start falling.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I guess it makes sense. I mean, you've got the sixth gun. What's holding Griselda back from just opening up the seal and just moving ahead? And so people do have to, I guess, move very quickly. I like the idea. It's also quite terrifying that, you know, this gray witch comes to town and she's like, I will give you all of your dreams, all of your wishes. I will remake the world and you will be the kings and queens of the world if you just let me kill you. And the whole town is like, and the town is just like, yeah, okay, we'll willingly go to our deaths so that you can slaughter us so that we can open up this portal to hell and remake the world. And to be honest, that portal to hell opening that just spirals down and down and down for eternity is pretty amazing.
It is. The art is really outstanding in this book. I mean, it's been great from the beginning, but I feel like in this volume in particular, you can see the maturation of having drawn these characters and this story for this much time. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's really like next level good here.
Yeah. And even Colonel Hume shows back up at the end too,
which
which is kind of scary.
He is. He's the worst. Yeah. Him and his wife are the worst.
Yeah. She does not show back up, but that's okay.
Well, she had a pretty definite end.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's not a loose end at this stage.
Yeah. Oh, just so, so good. I guess my only complaint is it just felt a little rushed trying to get everyone's story wrapped up. But again, I went right into volume 9 and it makes sense that they had to do it this way. And I guess I don't know what the sales are. It'd be interesting. I'm going to see. I'm not going to make any promises. I'm going to see if I can get Cullen Bunn to come on the next time that we review the final volume of this.
Oh, you should. He's funny. He does a Starro impersonation. That's really funny.
just to get some insight into this entire story and see what he will share and divulge. But I don't think that Oni Press at any time was like, okay, you need to wrap this up because it's not selling, or, you know, it's selling less than 5,000 copies, so we're going to cancel it. I don't think that was going on. I think it's just the story had to come to this point, but I would like to get some of his insight into this. What do you guys think? Yes, no? Ashley says yes.
Oh, yeah.
For
Starro. That'd be great.
Yes, for Starro. Screw Six Gun. I got to talk Starro with Mr. Butt.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to add? I mean, I really enjoyed this. I had the one minor problem. The art is great. The story is great. Seeing all the characters come back was fascinating. What are some likes, dislikes from you, Rodrigo?
I mean, you know me, I'm the sort of person who can find something to dislike in pretty much everything.
Sure.
But it's hard. It's difficult because they, you know, it's like Six Gun is very tight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like anything that they set up, they finish up. And not only that, but even things that you didn't think were recurring themes or characters or anything like that, they, you know, check back with them. You know, that happens a lot in this issue. There is a sense of hopelessness, but also moments where, you know, the bad guy is like, oh, well, those crafty heroes got around that thing that I did. So, you know, it's like, clearly the forces of evil are in control, but the heroes still have a glimmer of hope, right? And that's what you want out of your really the end of your third arc.
Right.
As it all kind of comes together or falls apart.
Yeah. Ashley, what about you?
I think that this is, without feeling like the end, it's such a wonderful culmination of everything that's been built up to this point. This volume makes me like the other volumes retroactively more.
And
I liked them all from anywhere from just fine to I really liked that one that was in the snow. And I don't have a lot of qualms with it. I don't have a lot of problems with it. Except to say, if you want to read it, I'm sorry, but you got to read the seven that came before.
Yeah, you really should.
And Gord comes back and he's my favorite. So like, I can't complain. All my favorite characters in the series die and then like kind of creepily show up. Like Bill John just shows up every once in a while and he's made of goo.
Yeah. Now, in a couple of months, I'm trying to look here when we get to the final volume. I think I want to say it's like in March. Yeah, in March, we will read Volume 9, Boot Hill, which is the final chapter of this.
That's a good title.
The Sixth Gun. Yeah. But there are three other trade paperbacks, or there may be more, because I was looking for the, there must be four, because it covers the Indian, the Native American group in there as well. There is Days of the Dead, there's Dust to Death, and there's Sons of the Gun that, while not required reading, they may bring a little bit more insight as to what is going on and why it's going on in the final volume. Because there is one thing that happens in the final volume that I was left scratching my head. I was like, oh, this suddenly appeared out of nowhere, but it's actually covered in the Sixth Gun Days of the Dead volume. And doesn't mean that it's going to diminish your pleasure of the final volume of this. But if you were looking for more side story of what's going on in this world of the Sixth Gun, then those other three or four volumes are worth tracking down and reading as well. So just to give you a little heads up, as we go into that ninth volume in March, maybe some further reading for everyone. I probably wouldn't read them after the ninth volume, to be honest, because volume nine ends and it's pretty definite. I'm satisfied with that ending.
Does the world end?
You're going to have to find out in March. All right. I think that is where we are going to wrap it up this week. Again, sorry that Matthew was not here. Like I said, stuck at the airport, but we must move on. And he'll be back next week, I'm sure. In fact, he'll be back Thursday for Dueling Review. You will hear him in a top five this week, I'm pretty sure. And a whole lot more going on at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. You can find it on the RSS feeds or of whatever system that you use. I'm sure you can find all of our shows there. You can also find them at majorspoilers.com. Final reminder, if you got some worth out of the show, you got some information, entertainment, whatever it may be, consider giving a little back. Head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. It's only through kind people like our patrons and our VIP members that we are able to keep these shows going, able to keep them for free. And if you want to keep these shows going and support us from now until the end of time, which apparently is in March, then head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. So much cool stuff, so much extra stuff that is over there. And we are getting very close to our next goal of releasing Critical Hit a week early. So if you're wanting to find out what happens next, become a patron, get us to that next goal, and you will have a special feed right there on the Patreon page that will get you those episodes a week ahead of everyone else. So there you go. All right. We are going to be back next week because that's what we do. We are going to be talking about everyone's favorite hero, the Ray, because we know that you love comics. We do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2009.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2010.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2011. Major Spoilers is copyright 2012.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2013.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.